I'm Gab, he's Jules. Partly cloudy skies over West London today, but Jules, we have a big show yes. because obviously four slate of games in Ligue 1, in Serie A, in La Liga, yeah. League Cup in England, plenty going on. And I'm going to start, though, by talking about Real Madrid and Carlo Ancelotti, yeah. their big win. Obviously, they won 6-1 last night. Marco Asensio scores a hat-trick. Karim Benzema, 2 goals, 2 assists. They're looking really good. Leaving aside they're looking good, they're looking very different because the last 2 years this was the team that stout defending, one goal here, one goal yeah. there. We thought Ancelotti was just kind of like an older, chunkier version of Zidane in his style. Why is it so different?
More rhythm, I think more energy. Maybe the fact that in a game like this one against Mallorca, I think the average age of the team was 25. There was a lot of youngsters, Rodrigo, Camavinga, Valverde, Vinicius, Miguel.
So the younger players score more goals than older players?
No. I think but maybe that kind of energy helps. Right. I think the intent and the intention from Carlo Ancelotti are more attacking than with Zinedine Zidane, which I think was more into controlling the game, controlling the tempo of the game as well. And we've said it from the beginning, I think this is a team that will concede chances, and they conceded a goal against Mallorca. There was a couple of other times where maybe they could have conceded, but they will score more goals as well, because I think this that kind of mindset that they have, and it's certainly far more entertaining to watch, and credit goes to Carlo Ancelotti. And it's not a criticism of Zinedine Zidane. It's just a different way of playing. That what so far what we've seen. I think he's been really entertaining.
I wonder if there's a correlation to Toni Kroos and Modric not being there. And it's obviously not a knock on them. Casemiro wasn't there last night either, of course.
Yeah.
But when you have that older midfield, right, you know you can control the game. Hmm. When you've got Camavinga and Valverde in there, you know, great players, but your temptation is to go out and saying, like, let these Broncos buck. You know, let's let them run.
Yeah, completely.
Whereas Kroos and Modric, you might be like, hey, let's pick our spots a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. And I think Kroos is coming back training and he will come back at some point in this team. But maybe in some games, of course, you can still play that legendary yeah. midfield three. But maybe in other games, it's either Modric on Kroos with some of the youngsters. I like Asensio in a more midfield position against Mallorca. He scored the 3 goals in very different position than when he usually gets the ball when he's on the wing. And I'm not sure being stuck to the touchline as a right winger, for example, helps him massively in his game. I think it's more interesting to have him a bit inside, more at the heart of the game. And certainly that hat-trick was pretty good for him, considering we know that he's a player that needs that kind of confidence to keep getting going and not being consistent like he's been the last 2 years.
We're going to get into Asensio more and the different options there, but when you take a step back again, I think, and talk about Karim Benzema and the level that he's playing at. But I just want to start from this point. Karim Benzema has been around a long, long time. He was a prodigy at Lyon before he even went to Real Madrid yep. for a lot of money. At Real Madrid for many years. He played, you know, he was sharing time with Higuain.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Mourinho hunting with a cat, hunting with a dog joke. He was the blue collar guy who did the running for Cristiano mm-hmm. and Bale and whatever. Did he always have this in his locker or did
always.
He? Or is there a moment always. When he improved?
Always. I think he's improved through all his career, but I think you learn from the lows that you have or even the highs. You learn from other players, you learn from managers.
Yeah, but why wasn't he playing like this 10 years ago? That's what I want to know. When he was like 10 years ago, when he's 24 years old, prime of your career, you're around Madrid.
But because you don't have training. The same experience. There's a reason why. Of course, I think there's a reason why at 34.
Yeah, I'm sorry, he's a world-class player, right?
Yeah.
At 24 years old, even without all this experience, right, Robert Lewandowski, Cristiano Ronaldo, all these guys are
but
playing.
Cristiano and Ibrahimovic scored more goals after they turned 30 than before they turned 30.
Okay, Cristiano Ronaldo was pretty darn good at 24, yeah?
Yeah, but it was not, I think he was still learning. And I think Karim, maybe his maturity came a bit later than Lewandowski or Cristiano or Messi or the others. Maybe he's learned a lot about himself and the others in the last few years. Also, I think that he's never been the main guy. I think that could have never kind of worked until he was the main guy, until he became the main guy.
I appreciate what you're saying about how maybe he needed the experience, maybe he needed to learn.
And be the main guy.
Be the main guy. But equally, I think we're kind of experiencing, I can't help but wonder if there was some kind of system error here. Because, look, obviously, in the 9 years or whatever it is that he played with Cristiano, he's not going to be the best player on the team. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's fine. But if you have all this ability, I wonder, I would have expected a manager to say, Kareem, you can do much more.
How? Because Cristiano takes a shot a game. What's left for the other? And it's not criticism on Cristiano. It worked great, and they won a lot of things, and I think Karim was very happy. But I just don't think
he has, like, seven assists this season, Karim Benzema. He didn't have this many assists when he could just pass the ball to Cristiano. Cristiano would shoot all the time. Like, he's become a much better player.
Yeah, more complete
than he was.
Yeah.
And I go back further, all the time when he was alternating with Higuain, that wasn't a million years ago either.
No, but I do think
you blame Mourinho for that.
No. I don't blame him. Blame is the wrong word, but it's tough. I think it was tough for him. I think it was tough that even the Real Madrid fans didn't really believe in him. That the Madrid media and how powerful they are didn't really believe in him either. Even when he was doing good things for the team and for Cristiano, there was still that sort of lack of recognition, which I think, even if he will never say it because he's far too proud, he suffered from in a way. And that's why I'm so glad that things are now the way they are. The other thing, Gab, is he's fitter than he's ever been. I promise you, he's lost. Not that he was never overweight or anything like this, but certainly in terms of the his fitness. And, you know, what's that thing where you calculate the fat that you have on you? You know, like
body fat percentage.
Yeah, that, which was never, it was never high for a player, I mean. But now he's lower than the lowest than the low. I mean, it's crazy. The guy spends his time in the gym, whether it's his own at home or at Valdebebas. And I just think that he learned as well from people like Cristiano Ronaldo. And I just think he's 34. And I tweeted it last night. That first touch with his back on his second goal against Mallorca, it's all on purpose. It's all meant to be. That's what he wants to do. I've watched it 1,000 times. And he's done it before in the past. He's a bit ahead of the ball. He knows exactly where the ball is going to land. He does that to control the ball and then turn and then finishes. And I just think the guy is amazing. And like you said, he turns 34 in December.
So Sid Lowe spoke to Ancelotti after the game, and he pointed out to him, because obviously going back to Asensio, there was this thing where people are saying Asensio isn't happy, he's not playing. And Ancelotti said, oh, good. I want people to be unhappy when they're not playing. And then what does he do? He puts Asensio in the lineup, gives him almost a free role. He's got Camavinga behind him.
Yeah.
He's pretty much in the hole. Rodrigo one side, Vini the other, Benzema in front. And run with it. And he said, like, you know, that I love it if Isco's not happy, if Jovic isn't happy when they don't play. And it makes them hungrier. Is this good coaching, good psychology,
really good,
or is it just a case of Asensio saying, well, I'm not happy, but let me seize my chance?
But there's one thing that we knew before the season started and Carlo going back, right, is that the man management would be spot on. You know, we didn't know exactly how they would play, if they would score that many goals. But we knew two things. One, that Benzema would still continue to be the main guy and carry the team. If you would tell me after 6 games he would have scored 8 goals and given 7 assists, which, by the way, in the 21st century, Cristiano or Messi had never done. No one after 6 La Liga matches in the first 6 of the season have reached those numbers. So I think this is pretty special. But we knew that Karim would still be the main guy. Karim the Dream, as my kids call him. And then we knew that Carlo would do a great job with that squad in terms of TLC, in terms of putting them in the right environment, giving them that confidence. We focused a lot on Hazard at the time, and that Carlo would be the one to relaunch the career. And maybe we didn't think about Asensio, but Asensio was the same problematic. It was, can Carlo relaunch that guy's career? The talent is great. It was never in doubt. And Carlo is probably the right guy for that, because the way he talks to them, the ideas that he has, what they do on the training pitch, all of that works in those kind of cases.
I'm intrigued by this 4-2-3-1 setup, and I'm just wondering, obviously we'd seen Asensio play mostly on the wing because it was supposed to be 4-3-3.
And even yesterday, he tend to go more right.
But I'm wondering, is this something that we might see more of? This 4-2-3-1, obviously, you presume Casemiro's coming back. And I'll get to Casemiro in a moment because I think there's some stuff going on there. But, you know, two holding midfielders, you can make it Casemiro and Valverde. You could even go Casemiro and Kroos if you wanted when Kroos comes back too.
Yeah.
and then Vinicius on one side, Hazard, or maybe even Hazard in the Asensio spot, and somebody else. Could this be a viable alternative for Real Madrid?
But we saw, if you look at the system that Carlo has played so far, we've had a 4-4-2 with Hazard and Benzema up front. We had this sort of 4-2-3-1 with Asensio in a kind of a free role. We've had the usual 4-3-3 where that they know so well, and that has been really the trademark in the last few years. So clearly he's like, Carlo is saying, look, we have to be versatile here, depending on the opposition, depending on the players who are available or not. Camavinga, as a first start for him at Real Madrid, playing as a holding midfielder. This is not his best position, and you saw he played an hour, tried to keep it simple, but defensively, I'm not sure he's ready really for that kind of position in a team like that. But Carlo will keep trying, and I think there will be a point where he will know exactly, okay, we play Barcelona, this is what we're going to do with those guys. We play Shakhtar in the Champions League, this is what we're going to do. We play Sheriff, this is what we're going to do. And I think this is where he's so good, isn't it?
I'm not suggesting that he read my Monday Musings column and says, oh, Gab is right. But he did exactly what I suggested, to be fair. Like, I don't, with Carvajal out, and it's a loss, and I think the best thing you can do is make sure he comes back 100% so he doesn't get injured again.
Yeah.
I don't want to see Lucas Vazquez right back in this setup.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
It's a nice idea in certain situations. I want to see Nacho, and then until Mendy returns, let's let Miguel do his thing on the
completely.
Back. And that is what he did against Mallorca. This is a better solution until 100%. Carvajal and Mendy are back, yeah?
And even in terms of solidity, let's don't think about Nacho going forward, can he put crosses in? That's not what we were asking him for anyway. But that solidity, we saw him playing at left back last season and did a really good job there, even actually going forward.
Yeah, but they have like five left backs now. I don't need to see Nacho.
No. But what I mean by that is he's versatile enough to play right back, left back, right centre back, left centre back. And I think it's good. Use it. You've got Alaba and Eder Militao as your two centre backs. That's fine. Miguel or Falamendi at left back. That's good. And then Nacho at right back if you need him. And I think you're far more settled defensively than if you try a Lucas Vazquez just to have an Alaba left back and then Eder Militao and Nacho, because I think Lucas Vazquez will always be the weaker link in there because he's not right back and has never been and will never be.
I think at this stage, Alaba, I think we need to think of him as a central defender.
Casemiro, why is bothering you?
I think he's been poor this year. Those games, like was it against Levante, they conceded three goals.
Yeah.
I think he's made mistakes this year. I don't know if it's because he's physically fatigued, whether he needs a break. And I realized it was only against Mallorca. But the balance that you had from having two guys, you know, right-footed, left-footed, Camavinga and Valverde, I just thought it made everything about him better.
You know,
it gave the fullbacks more freedom. The center back seemed more settled. Casemiro has this thing, which again, when it works, great. But when he gets sucked back, he almost becomes a third central defender. I think he can upset the balance of the two center backs. And if he's not sharp, if he gets a little rash, when we talk about how Casemiro gets away with, I mean, people who dislike Real Madrid always point out how, you know, Casemiro always gets away with one.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets like a free hit a game because he plays for Real Madrid. All right, fine.
Yeah, he never gets yellow cards.
But you know, when he's off his game, those fouls turn into yellow cards.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I'm wondering, are you, again, better off looking at him and saying, take a break? You know, maybe let's start thinking about Casemiro as a starter again, maybe after this international break.
Yeah, maybe.
Because
he's played a million games.
And those two guys, Camavinga, not phased.
Yeah.
Valverde, not phased. People said Valverde is not as good defensively. I don't need him to be. If he's got another dude next to him, I don't need him to be Casemiro, the Uruguayan Casemiro.
No. Yeah, I'm with you.
And he's got the balance. They take turns making runs.
It'd be interesting to see what Carlo does with Casemiro. And again, going back to that man management, I think Carlo is the right guy. Just quickly on Camavinga, I'm so happy, not because he's French, but because if you're 18 and you move from Rennes, where you've always been the prodigy there since you were a kid and, you know, making your debut at 16, and then you wanted to leave because you didn't want to leave on a free next summer, and then it's Real Madrid and everything is so much bigger, it's so much greater, and then you go there and you work hard, you know you go in and you're not phased and you bring something to this team, whether it's off the bench or starting. I'm just thinking, why? He's only 18 and yet showing so much maturity. I think he's remarkable, and I think he deserved the shot.
I think the other reason, if you're a Real Madrid fan, to to look good. And again, maybe I'm getting a little carried away with all the with the fact that we all the kids here, right? Let's project forward 2 years, right? So it's September 2023.
Yeah.
And I'm asking myself, what does this Real Madrid look like? And I'm thinking to myself, it's pretty darn good. Courtois still being his prime.
Yeah.
I think at right back, they do need to have a think about, you know, the succession moving on from Dani Carvajal, and you can do that over the next 2 years. Center back, I think Alaba, you'll still be good. You'll still get something out of Nacho. Adrian Militao, age-wise, will be. Quality-wise, I still need him to make a step up, but maybe that is
maybe
where you can bring somebody in. Left back, I got no issues. Mendy and Miguel.
Yeah.
And as much as I love Marcelo, I'm sure they're not going to extend his contract again. I think that ship's done, right? Midfield, Valverde, Camavinga, Casemiro, I think he'll still be around. He can still give you something. Toni Kroos, I would assume you will be moving out. So maybe you need to think about one more signing there. We're talking over the next 2 years,
you're
right?
Luka Modric as well.
And Modric will go. Yeah. But in terms of the starting 11, right, you're thinking one big signing.
Yeah.
And maybe another guy, right?
Yeah. Like a Pogba.
Yeah. Front three, Hazard, you assume, phased out. You're going to start, you have Vinicius. I think if he continues his development. On the other wing, probably not. Maybe Rodrigo, maybe not. If he does, Rodrigo makes it, it's gravy, but I assume a big signing on the wing. And Mbappe through the middle, and you're sorted.
I knew you were going to say that.
Or maybe
that.
Mbappe on the wing and Haaland through the middle. You like that better?
I knew you were going to say that. But yeah, I'm with you. I think the post-Benzema era will depend, of course, a lot who comes in to replace him. And whether that's Kylian, great. Haaland, great. Both, even better. No problem. But that's a big one. And I just hope for Real Madrid, they don't miss out on either. I don't think they will. I think one of them will go. More likely Mbappe, for sure. But if you miss out on them too, I don't know where you go next to find who's coming after Benzema. But that's one for later. But yeah, it's
Vlahovic.
Yeah, it could be Vlahovic. No, but you will have other options, you know, but those two are the ones really that you cannot,
right.
One of them certainly you cannot miss out. You know, I've had a lot of messages from Real Madrid fans on social media saying, especially after seeing me talking about Ronald Koeman and how he should get sacked, saying, no, we don't want him to get sacked. We want to see how low Barca and Koeman can go.
So Real Madrid fans like you now.
They like me now, they like me now. For now, just for now.
All right, we have a final issue, which is not Real Madrid, but we need to shoehorn here into the show, because last night we were asked on Extra Time about our favorite desserts.
Yeah.
And Shaka Hislop came out with something I'd never heard of.
Some horrible.
Goat's cheese cherry ice cream.
Yeah,
which
that sounded.
I don't think it sounds potentially good. I don't know if that's a Trinidad thing.
Clearly,
Dan Thomas came out with a banana split, because Dan Thomas is of course a child.
Yeah, he's 8 years old. You were really safe with tiramisu. I mean, come on.
I had to go.
You played it safe.
I think we both chose to fly the flag for our respective culinary cultures. I will say this, and people will, and I'm going to get myself in trouble with Italians. I think when it comes to desserts and pastries, I think France is ahead of Italy.
I didn't hear that. Can you say that again?
I didn't hear.
I could not
listen,
hear.
Listen. Okay. In Italy, we've got regional culture, right? I am from Milan and Parma in the center and the north. I know people in the south where they're more known for their pastries might disagree with me.
Yeah.
But for me, the range and variety of French desserts is ahead of Italian desserts. Although I still think we have very good desserts.
Yeah.
Much better than the country where we live and where they have stuff like spotted dick and trifle and whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, weird angle stuff.
Yeah.
However, this is what surprised me. When asked to name a French dessert, you could have gone with classics like creme brulee,
tartatin,
what's it called, the floating island, Île Flottante, all this stuff.
Millefeuille,
come on, man. And what did you choose? You chose éclair.
Éclair au chocolat. Yeah, because I love them, man. They're so good.
But that's not really a dessert.
But it is. When you go to the patisserie and you've got a big family lunch or dinner, right, for dessert, you go and get one of each of all those amazing desserts, or pastry if you want, but dessert that you call. So you get one or two éclairs au chocolat, one millefeuille, one piece of tartatin, one piece of Il Flottant, and you've got them all in a lovely box. I can still see in my head when I was going to my grandma, and you've got them in the box, and then everybody picks, you know, what they like, and everybody knew that éclair au chocolat, not dark chocolate, milk chocolate, because you've got éclair au chocolat with dark chocolate if you want, some with milk chocolate, you've got some with caramel in it if that's your stuff. For me, it's milk chocolate. That was mine. You know, my nan knew that was mine.
But would you order it in a restaurant ahead of something? I get it. You go to the pastry, yeah. You get the little box. That's fine. But would you order it?
I would. Yeah.
See, I don't know. I think you're missing a trick there. Anyway, so we had to have our culinary dessert segment. Hit us up on social. Let us know what you think. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough, Madrid. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester United are knocked out of the League Cup by West Ham. Though maybe it wasn't really Manchester United and West Ham, given that United made 10 changes, yeah. West Ham made 11 changes. The magic of the League Cup. But, Jules, does this matter to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? I know he said he's sorry, but like, does it matter in the grand scheme of things?
Of course it does. This is a competition. Why would you pull that face? Of course it does. This is a competition that he could have won. He still hasn't won anything. Shall I remind you? He hasn't won anything.
So then he walks around saying, oh, like, I won the League Cup.
Okay, is the League Cup better than nothing? Be honest. Is the League Cup better than nothing? It's yes or no, the answer. Is the League Cup better than nothing?
Well, no. I suppose it is better than nothing.
Thank you.
But
so, it's a pro. It's not a good thing.
How do we take this seriously when you change your entire team?
Okay, look at it that way. When was the last time West Ham won Old Trafford?
14 years ago.
2007. 17
years. Yes! 14 years ago! Nailed
well
it!
Well done. 17 games in a row. And now,
but it's not West Ham, and it's not United. It's 11 other dudes in shirts.
B team against B team. Right. What did they do with the ball? Nothing. They had a lot of the ball. They had 27 shots. At some point, someone will have to tell those players, don't shoot from anywhere all the time. It's not going to work.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
By the way, on Pogba, this happened last week. We were talking about the show, but did you see the video of him? He's walking off the pitch, and the West Ham fans are like abusing him, and they're like, "Shut your mouth!" And he stands up.
And he stares.
I love that. I love that.
Manchester City also make a bunch of changes and beat Wickham 6-1, and their legendary striker, Akinfenwa Gab. How are they looking ahead of the big clash with Chelsea on Saturday?
I can't really tell because they played for a completely new defense, and, you know, with a bunch of guys with double-barreled last names I'd never heard of. It's hard to judge. I think the really encouraging thing is obviously Foden and De Bruyne, right?
Yeah.
They're fit. I don't know if they're both going to start this weekend. We saw them already the week before. I think it's obviously the game of the weekend, Chelsea against City, and you want to have those guys on board. Mm. I'll be curious to see if, you know, my feelings on Ferran Torres. I love Ferran Torres, but I wonder if this is a game where maybe you play somebody else at center forward against the three defenders and kind of leave them to Mark.
I disagree with you because I think they could do with these runs and his runs in behind and that kind of pace of forwards.
Juventus win their first league game of the season, coming from behind to beat Spezia 3-2. Also, the first time they score second half goals this season. Jules, are they finally turning things around?
No. Because they were behind. They were behind again. They took the lead and then went behind, conceded two goals. Poor defending again. Similar goals that they conceded before again. And then after that, if they don't have Chiesa in that team, I'm not even sure where they go.
Chiesa's a baller, isn't he?
Oh, my God. He bailed them out. And he was so good. And yeah, of course, they missed him. And it's not easy when you don't have your best player for the start of the season. So that can explain why it's such a slow start. But it's not because they beat Spezia that they're out of the woods just yet. I think there's still so much work to do defensively and offensively.
I think one of the big things for me was you had Moise Kean, Matthijs de Ligt, and Chiesa all scoring in this game. Those are three of the younger players who Allegri was... He wasn't critical of them. There were stories that he kind of dug them out and whatever. This is your future, right? I don't want to see Bonucci and Chiellini play together any more than is necessary. In fact, I don't want to see them at all. One at a time, please. You know, unless it's a big game.
You need the experience. Yeah, good.
Use de Ligt. Use de Ligt. Get Chiesa in the lineup.
And Moise Kean showed
that. Moise Kean can come off the bench.
He can do a good job there, for sure.
By the way, if you get a chance, let's invite everybody to do it. I don't know if you remember this, Jules, but the first goal from Spezia, Jassy's goal.
Yeah.
His goal celebration.
Oh, yeah.
Now we know
the goal is great. The goal is great to start with.
Nice goal, but now we know who Cristiano Ronaldo has been copying all this year.
Exactly.
Or is it the other way around?
Exactly. Speaking of Juve, a video of a fan racially abusing Milan goalkeeper Mac Maignan from the game at the weekend on Sunday has gone viral. Gab, what is the club going to do about it?
This is a weird situation. If you haven't seen this, I mean...
He's warming up near the...
He's warming up by the touchline. It's like 45 minutes before kickoff. From what I can tell, the guy is filming Mike Maignan warming up while racially abusing him. And then he puts the video on the internet. So, like, I don't think you need to be CSI Turin to go and find him, right? There's a lot of people around there. Juventus have said, we're going to find this guy and we're going to ban him. Go ahead and do it. Apparently, I haven't found him yet. There's also other suggestions that this guy might be mentally disturbed. Because obviously, when you're doing that and then you post it on the internet, I mean, you kind of want to get caught. But either way, I don't care if you've got mental health issues when it comes to racial abusing people. You do this in public.
Yeah,
you go down.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that.
Exactly.
FIFA's disciplinary committee have given Hungary a 2-game stadium ban with 1 game suspended following the racist abuse that took place when they played England last month. Jules, they also, of course, have the UEFA ban from the Euros, which is, I think it's 3 games and one of the 3 is suspended. Will this make a difference?
No. It's too soft, Gab. We talked about it already before. This is too soft. I'm sorry. What's too much ban? What is it? Okay, they're going to sit out 2 games against, I don't know, Bulgaria, and where they're all white anyway, so they would not have been there able to racially abuse someone. Second game, the same, and then they're going to come back the 3rd game, let's say against England again or France, and their back players will be targeted again. And then we will go back to square one and say, okay, what do we do now? This is too soft. This is not strong enough, not tough enough. They will not learn that way. I'm sorry.
I think this is a very small penalty, and I think FIFA should have also looked at the fact that, yes, it's a different competition in UEFA, but you know, this is a clear situation where you should look at precedent.
Yeah, exactly.
This is recidivism.
They did it again.
And stadium bans only work if you can create peer pressure from other fans to say, look, I want to keep supporting my team. Bob over there is racially abusing him. I'm going to go, and I'm going to help identify him, right? I want to know, has this happened? Has the Hungarian FA or the Hungarian police, have they created a framework for this to happen where people can say, you know, yes, it's Laszlo and Victor and, sorry, I'm using stereotypical Hungarian names.
Okay.
I appreciate, you know, otherwise,
yeah,
this isn't going to make a
difference.
Completely.
I'm with you completely. Meanwhile, England are at risk as well of having to play behind closed doors after UEFA investigating the troubles that we saw before the Euro 2020 final at Wembley. Gab, how do you see this going? Can they really get some sort of
suspension? I think they deserve a one-match ban or two-match ban. It's not just, it's the fact that there were supposed to be COVID safety checks going into the stadium. There weren't. It's the fact that you expect decent policing at the stadium, inside the stadium, and there weren't. There were many more people who were there who weren't supposed to be. People who had bought and paid for their seats weren't able to sit in their seats. You had a health hazard. And it's before I get into the carnage that happened outside the stadium and the behavior. Now, it's not just the England FA's fault. It's the people who run Wembley Stadium, it's the police.
Yeah.
But I think at the very, if I were the FA, I would say, like, okay, guys, look, this is what we're doing. We've pushed on the police. This is the report. This is when the report's coming out. We're doing everything we can. This is what we've done, and hope that we do better. We cannot have stuff like this. Something really bad could have happened. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. Extraordinary scenes at Barcelona where Ronald Koeman read a prepared statement asking for support and then walked out of his press conference. Jules, Barca drew 1-1 on Monday with Granada. They play Cadiz in a few hours. Judging from your words on the FC show last night, you have very little sympathy.
Very, very little. I mean, at least we told you. We warned you that this was going to happen. We told you he was not good from the beginning. We gave him a bit of credit last year when things improved a little bit, when they played three at the back. But this is not good enough. What we saw against Granada, it was a new low, Gab. It was such a terrible performance. One of the worst I've seen Barcelona put in the last few years, that he has to go now. There's no future to him. He's not building anything. There's no identity.
But you're saying this because of the performance against Granada. You're not saying this because of his statement and his things in the press conference.
So when I said that, that was before
that
press conference. That was an absolute joke. What, he doesn't have enough cojones now to take questions? What is this all about? Who is this guy who said like, no, you can't ask me anything. I'm just going to read three sentences saying like, we need your support. Thank you and good night. What is going on? What is this?
My thoughts on Koeman, I just wonder at this stage with the contract that he has, with what it would cost you. They've been linked with our pal, Roberto Martinez. The guy's preparing for a World Cup, I presume. So it would cost you money to get him out. I don't know if it's smart for them.
There must be better.
I think you make the change when all of a sudden you're convinced the Champions League, your top four finish is in peril. That's when you make the change.
Luis Suarez come back into the starting lineup and Atletico Madrid beat Getafe away to go top of the table. Gab, he scored twice, including a late winner. Again, them scoring late.
Yeah, two goals at the end. And look,
it wasn't great.
No, it's not a good performance. It wasn't a good performance at the weekend. I thought against Athletic Bilbao, things aren't working. In their defense, they did have a ton of people out. And on top of that, he rotated as well. Your boy Griezmann again.
It's tough.
But Cholo's got different weapons at different times. Next man up, right guy steps up.
If Carlos Alenia doesn't get sent off for Getafe, I really don't think they win this game.
No, but we've said it so many times. Sometimes it's better to be lucky in tough times.
Yeah, I guess so.
Speaking of leaving it late, Paris Saint-Germain win at Metz. You should be celebrating this.
Yeah, a win is a win.
Metz are horrible, and they do it without that Lionel Messi guy. But Jules, why is everything so freaking difficult?
Because you don't take your chances in this game. In this game, Gab, you should have been 3-0 up after half an hour. And then you've put the game to bed. They can score if they want on set pieces like they did. But that's all they can do. Instead, you're only 1-0 up and you get exposed, as we've been explaining, because it's still not the right formula. And you concede chances. And if Keylor Navas doesn't make a great save before the break, you even go back to the dressing room 2-1 down.
By the way, is this rotating goalkeepers thing going to continue?
I mean, it looks like it. Because clearly now they do one game Donnarumma, one game Navas, one game Donnarumma. Let's see. I don't think it's a good idea at all. Inter come from behind to beat Fiorentina 3-1 on Tuesday night with 3 second half goals. Gab, it took them quite a while to get going.
They did. It did. But look, Fiorentina
were good.
A really good side. The manager, Vincenzo Italiano, they picked up. He was at Spezia last year. They went out there. They were aggressive. They pressed life out of them. They made it really, really uncomfortable for him. So Fiorentina, I thought, ran out of gas in the second half.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So let's praise Inter's resilience. Praise the fact they have a lot of weapons and they keep going. They're right up there.
Can you tell Nico Gonzalez you cannot clap the referee sarcastically?
So stupid.
I hate those yellow cards. Why are you doing
this? Felix. Come on, man. We love you, though, Nico.
Yeah.
Liverpool beat Norwich away 3-0 as Takumi Minamino and Divock Origi. Divock Origi, of course.
Origi.
Mark Ogden once put in the FC 100 top 10.
Yeah, of
one
course.
Year. Anyway, which of these two backup forwards is likely to get more playing time and be more important to Liverpool this season?
I think it's Origi. Gab, we saw him starting against Milan and giving the assist on the Salah goal as well. He starts again in that game. I think more than Minamino, I guess, who was sent on loan second half of last season to Southampton, if you remember. I think Origi is probably the one, the most likely to be fourth or fifth in that sort of pecking order for forwards behind that the other four. Yeah, I think he can do a job there, probably. I'm just
not, like
just not a big fan, that's all. Still no Giroud and no Ibrahimovic, but Milan keep winning, beating Venezia 2-0. Gab, it's the little man Brahim Diaz once again, and please, praise my boy Theo Hernandez, because him coming on changed the whole game.
Yes, he did. Theo, look, they rested a bunch of players. Gabbia played at center back, yeah. I think, with Romagnoli, if memory serves. But they were patient. They waited. They made the chances. Theo, you're right, came on, helped out, even scored a goal.
But and this is Ted Bryan.
This little Brahim Diaz, man.
He's
a bit special.
He's good.
Arsenal advance in the League Cup with a 3-0 win over Wimbledon. Jules, did Arteta learn anything going into the North London derby?
He learned that Eddie Nketiah can score backheel goals, which was lovely. It was a lovely goal. And Alexandre Lacazette can take penalties. That was not as lovely as the backheel goal from Nketiah. But you've given game time to some of your subs. You saw that Bukayo Saka came on in the second half and I think was quite bright in the way he played, which is good because we've explained before that he looked tired. I think he will need a bit of time to get back to full fitness and to his best. So it's a good win. You take that win and you move on. Spurs also advanced in the League Cup, beating Wolves on penalties and playing a strong 11, Gab. Harry Kane scored, but there's a lot of debate about where he should be playing.
Yes, and I think this is something that we should debate right now.
Yeah, because we flagged it up already on Monday's show.
I know, but this won't go away. People point out he doesn't get enough touches in the box and whatever else. I want to see a strong message from Nuno. Either it's Kane behind Son or it's Kane up front and Son wide. It's got to be one of the two. You're not good enough to have Kane wander around the pitch. Now, he feels responsible to do that because he looks around and says, look, I'm better than everybody here. I want to make things happen, and that's great. But it doesn't do you any good if there's nobody up front, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't do you any good if it tires you out, and as a result, you're less effective in the box. Equally, though, the flip side is if we can't get him service in the box, might as well have him go pick up the ball himself.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it's true.
I just think this is big for Kane, not just now, but obviously his contractual situation in the summer. And I also like the fact that, no, Kane is not just a center forward for the umpteenth time.
No.
Rayo Vallecano beat Athletic Bilbao with a buzzer beater from, wait for it, Radamel El Tigre Falcao. Jules, he's 35, 2 goals in 2 games. We thought his legs had fallen off after all his knee injuries. This is a tremendous story.
It's an incredible story, Gab. Coming off the bench, scoring twice, helping this team, having an incredible impact where you're right. But I think a lot of people were thinking, he might score a few goals there and there, a few tap-ins, but no. But the energy that he has, he brings to that team. And you know what I love the most in this story? He's wearing the number 3 shirt. And you wonder, why number 3? He's always been a number 9, whether he wore the 9 or those kind of numbers. That was his dad's number. His dad passed away from a cardiac arrest in 2019, just after the turn of the year. And as a tribute for his dad, who was a former professional player, of course, he decided to wear the number 3. And now look at this. His dad from heaven is guiding him towards more glory. Incredible.
Even better fun facts, which our younger listeners might not know about. His dad was also named Radamel.
Yeah.
But his dad wasn't Radamel Falcao. His dad was Radamel Garcia. He chose Falcao to be his son's middle name because he was a big fan of the legendary Paulo Roberto Falcao, of course, former Roma and Brazil. Legend.
Exactly.
And so Falcao is actually his middle name, which I don't think everybody knew that.
Liverpool might not have spent much in the summer, but they're spending £60 million to add 7,000 seats to the stadium Anfield, taking the capacity to 61,000. Gab, is this money well spent? Are you happy with that move?
Yeah, I'm sure there are people out there saying, it's just about greed and stuff. Well, they could have spent this 60 million, could have bought Camavinga or something. Well, the reality is, we know money is, cash particularly, is tight with FSG. And this simply makes more financial sense. Those 7,000 seats will generate more revenue, which they can then reinvest in the club. And sure, long term, it also means the club is more valuable, so they make more money long term. It also gives more fans a chance to go to and club. Watch Liverpool.
Better atmosphere, more people.
Better atmosphere, means, more people. I mean, I'm sure they're not going to be great seats, but... But yeah, no, I think this is a logical thing, and it's much better, I think, to spend money on stuff like this than just to go and add another guy to sit on the bench.
Yeah, I agree.
Chelsea need penalty kicks to knock out Aston Villa as Timo Werner scores. Chelsea did not play well in this game. We're still talking about that League Cup. Jules, plenty of speculation that Werner could be headed to Bayern. As I can work this out, it's mainly because a lot of people in this country don't like him and think he can't finish.
He
switched agents, and he's now represented by the same guys who look after Upamecano, Niklas Süle, and one, Julian Nagelsmann.
Exactly. Why would Bayern want to sign Timo Werner?
Because Robert Lewandowski isn't going to play forever, and maybe they think he'll be center forward?
No? Because the right guy to take over Robert Lewandowski is Timo Werner.
No.
Okay.
No,
so
most definitely not.
I would be amazed if something like this happened sooner in January or next summer or whatever. I cannot see Bayern Munich ready to spend 60 million players on a player who is struggling to score, let's be honest.
And he's on a big salary.
And he's on huge money too. I don't know what Timo Werner wants to do. I think hearing him after the game against Villa, he was happy to finally play. He said it's been a really tough start season for him, which I can understand. And now he knows that with Lukaku being there, plus all the other options going forward that Thomas Tuchel has, I don't think he will play much apart from the League Cup and maybe the FA Cup. But I can't see why Bayern would want to sign him right now.
I want to say something else just about this, just because the agency that they work for is called, I think it's called 360 or something like that.
Yeah.
I have a major problem, and it should be illegal for an agency to represent both a manager and players at the same club. I'm not having a go at Nagelsmann. I love Nagelsmann. It happens with other people. Yeah. Obviously, Mourinho is represented by Jesse Food.
Of course. Loads of managers.
There's loads of situations like this. But this is a walking, talking conflict of interest. And it is one of the things that I think that the authority should look at.
Sticking with Chelsea, Gab, Marcus Alonso won't be taking a knee against racism before kickoff anymore because he feels the gesture has lost strength. That's his own words. A number of players have stopped doing it, but Alonso's case is different.
Yeah, well, sometimes entire clubs, like QPR, for example. Alonso's case is very different, simply in the fact that he's not a person of color and doesn't identify as one. So he's making what he thinks is a stronger stand. For me, the fact that you're telling people you want to do it, and he's basically going to point to where it says "Say No to Racism" on his badge or something.
That's what he did before the Spurs game.
Look, that's fine because you're making a statement, right? I would prefer that than have people kind of go along with it if people feel that the gestures dated. People have to be free to do this, but as you know, I was never on board with the league saying, "Okay, guys, we're all going to do this."
It has
to be an individual decision. But it isn't. I think it is a different dynamic that you have somebody who's not a person of color, he's the first kind of to say, "No, I'm going to do this in my own way. I'm going to do it on my own because this is important to me."
Why didn't he talk about it with his own players, with his own teammates, and tell them, "You know, I'm going to do it differently now"?
That's a really good question, and one to which I don't have
understand.
An answer.
I don't. I'm all for if he feels it differently and wants to do something different, no problem. But you know, go and see Romelu Lukaku, go and see Tony Rudiger and have a chat with them and explain them your decision because...
I presume he has.
Well, I don't know. I read that he hadn't mentioned it before the Spurs game and it's only after when he's starting speaking about it that they realised. Otherwise, because there's also a sense of unity, I understand, and solidarity towards your own teammates who either have been victims of racial abuse or feel like they need that kind of support. And if you don't let them know what you do and change the gesture that you're doing, not sure that's a good look.
But I think the key thing here is when it's an individual gesture, it has meaning. Can you imagine if Chelsea decided, we're all on board with this. We all like Marcos Alonso's new way of doing it. Let's all, at the start of the game, rather than taking a knee or doing whatever we want, let's all of us just go and point at our badges.
Yeah.
That would look kind of weird, right?
Yeah. So that's true.
James Rodriguez has found a new home. He's going to Qatar to join the mighty Al Rayyan. Jules, this is leaving a bad taste in many people's mouths.
Yeah, Gab. I think it's sad. I've got nothing against Al Rayyan and the Qatar League and all of that. And James, if he wants to go there, he's going there because that's all he has. Let's be honest, brutally honest here. This is 30 years old. He is an incredible talent. Whether you like his style, whether you like his attitude or anything, he's an incredible talent. And at 30, he should not be going to Qatar. I'm sorry, he should not be going to Qatar. But that's all he have on the table because of all the issues he's had at Everton, at Bayern Munich, at Real Madrid, all through the years. And I don't think anyone right now in the Big Five League is ready to take a gamble. He's on huge wages. And I find it so sad. I really find it sad that all this talent will be wasted in a way in Al Rayyan, in the Qatar League.
It's good for Everton that he's gone, yeah?
Well, yeah, because they were never going to play him. So... good to get rid of him.
But I don't want to be moralistic about it, but I think I will get on my soapbox just for a second. What annoys me here is you say, like, there'd be nowhere else for him in the Big Five leagues. Yeah, not on those wages. He could take a pay cut. You know, if he were to have his wages, he would still be making in excess of £5 million, €7 million.
Radamel Falcao is not being paid at Rayo Vallecano the same as he was in Monaco.
No question about it, right? He could do that.
I know.
Instead, he chooses. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's warming up for the World Cup, so he doesn't have
to. He's not even called up anymore by Colombia.
It's true.
I'm not sure playing for Al Rayyan will give him. You know, we'll get him being called back.
And that's because rules have changed. There's no more Ailton. He's not going to be naturalized by Qatar and play for them in the World Cup. So no,
exactly.
Yeah, it's
too bad.
It's just sad.
It's sad. It is sad.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
They played on Monday night and they won. And if they win again tonight, and we're recording this on Thursday morning, they'll be top of Serie A. Gab, can we show some love to Napoli?
I think we definitely should show some love because it's coming together. I have my reservations and doubts about Luciano Spalletti.
Yeah.
When he's good, when he doesn't do his Mr. Kurzak, he's very good. And they have the right vibe going. They've got different tools. Victor Osimhen's playing. He's performing. Khalidou Koulibaly has had a tremendous start to the season.
That volley scored.
I know. Wow. I know. They're fun to watch. Yep. I think they're serious contenders for Serie A this year. I didn't imagine I would have said that, you know, after the summer. Mm. The Premier League said they have no plans currently to make fans attending games show proof of vaccination or recovery from COVID or a negative COVID test. I guess the equivalent of what they would call the EU vaccination pass in the EU. Jules, is this a good idea?
I don't think so.
Because they had it in place. I mean, in theory, these were the rules for the Euros, right?
Yeah, and I don't think... Yeah, of course, if you have a 60 or 76,000 stadium at Old Trafford to check everybody's pass or, you know, COVID proof of vaccination or whatever, it could take a long time. I understand that. And this is the direction this country is taking. You know, no restrictions anymore, kind of like letting in go a lot. I'm just not completely comfortable with it. I go to stadiums all the time, like you, Gab. No one is wearing a mask. I'm thinking, like, really? Is this really the idea here? I don't know. I would rather, if that was all in place, it's not. I don't think they will do it. And that's the thing. It's very different in other countries where you need to show your pass to go to the restaurant, to go to the cinema. They decided against it in this country.
Yeah, I just don't want to have a situation where people start getting sick and then we have to go back to shutting down stadiums again.
But
that
would
be the worst possible situation.
Could be avoided, I think.
Situation. And I don't think, actually, it would take that much work.
No, I know.
Because even people who choose not to be vaccinated, and there's people out there, and you may agree with it, you may disagree with it, as far as we know, they're okay with taking rapid COVID tests.
Exactly.
So I don't see what the problem is.
We don't tell people,
here,
get the vaccine or you can't get into a stadium. We just said... people can show either a negative test or
exactly.
or their pass. UEFA have issued a statement with a pointed list of questions for FIFA about the World Cup proposal every 2 years. FIFA will need to provide answers to UEFA. Is that right, Gab? Is that the right way of doing it?
Well, as we said, I have a column up about this, about why FIFA are doing it, because of the inequality, whatever. And I've said before, I went on my rant about how, you know, it's not, you can say, oh, it's just about the money. Like, yeah, that's exactly what they're supposed to do. Raise money to give it to the rest of the world to develop football. Equally, I think UEFA are absolutely right to fight from their corner.
Completely.
Saying, especially given the way that they've gone about
this.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
And they have a list of specific questions and they want to meet. Now, they know they're going to get a meet, but I can completely understand if I'm UEFA, the clubs, the ECA, the people they represent, and you've got Wenger saying, well, maybe we'll have a decision by December.
That's
we can
a good
vote on it.
Impression.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to be like, what the hell? When were you going to come and talk to us?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
They have the big boycott stick that they can try to wield, and they have support from South America, but they have to have a conversation about this. Sevilla beat Valencia 3-1 as Eric Lamela is on the mark again. Just, can they make it a three-way race?
Definitely they can. Of
course. Normally, three-way race.
I mean, three-way,
who's the
third?
Real Madrid and Atleti,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Normally, three-way race in Spain means one thing. It's like, can Atleti make it? No. Atleti are right up there.
Yeah.
Real Madrid are right up there. And question is Sevilla.
Yeah, and I think they can. They were disappointing at the weekend. We said that. But they were brilliant. The first 22 minutes, they were 3-0 up already. And Valencia, you know, lost at the weekend. A cruel defeat in a way, let's put it that way, against Real Madrid, because it occurred in the last minutes of the game and they maybe deserve better. And maybe there was a bit of hangover in this game, certainly at the start, because of what happened against Real Madrid a few days before. But I saw Sevilla were brilliant. Eric Lamela, the assist for Papu Gomez, the goal, how clinical they were. Rafa Mir starting and scoring two up front instead of Enziri. I think there was a lot of good things in that game. And yeah, I think if they can find that consistency under Julen Lopetegui, they certainly, I think, can push the other two all the way. No question about that at all. Former referee Mark Clattenburg says in his new book that he's entirely in favour of referees explaining themselves after games, going on television and explaining why they make those decisions, and via conversations being made public as well. He also says that he was given a hard time because of his tattoos. What, and the fact that he likes Ed Sheeran as well?
Yeah, the Ed Sheeran thing is a big one. For those who don't know, it's not the tattoos, it's that he's got like a tattoo of like the, was it the Europa League final that he refereed or something like that.
And that's a trophy in itself, I guess, if you're a referee.
Well, it's funny. For a referee,
yes,
it's like a trophy.
You know, yeah.
I don't know that you get tattoos of your trophies, but maybe.
Reece James has a Champions League on his calf.
So Reece James, Mark Clattenburg, same type of. He came out, he compared himself, well, Colina has tattoos. Nobody complains about that. Like, I've never seen Colina's tattoos. I don't know where they are. Maybe in a place where I don't want to see them. I don't know if he has tattoos of trophy of games he's refereed in. It's funny with Clattenburg because obviously he's had a lot of ups and downs in his career. He left early to go to Saudi Arabia, become the head of referees there, where he made a ton of money.
Yeah.
And so I think he feels like he's got a lot of things to get off his chest. One interesting thing that he said, which I think speaks more broadly to refereeing, is the PGMOL, which is the organization that runs referees in the Premier League in this country, and the Football League as well, I think. It's run by a guy named Mike Riley, who's a former referee.
Yeah.
He says that when they assess referees, they do it on a point system. So it's literally like, oh, you know, you got that throw in right, okay, 1 point. You got that foul correct, 3 points. You got that wrong, minus 2 points. And he says you can't judge referees that way. You have to judge referees on the feel of the game. Every game is a story unto itself. He said he's had games where he got top marks and he felt he had a really bad game as a referee.
Yeah.
And other games where he felt he refereed very well and he got lower marks.
Yeah.
I can see his point.
Yeah, me too, definitely.
I don't know there's one size fits all, and I was thinking back, I think we both agree this is not a great generation of Premier League referees.
Certainly not in England.
Not in England. And is this part of the problem? Is it too schematic?
I don't know. So, one for you, Gab, that is not in our script and in our show, but yesterday Lyon beat Troyes in Ligue 1 really well, 3-1.
Emerson scored.
Yeah. Stéphanie Frappard was the referee, and there was something in the first half where I think she got it wrong, but anyway, she's a really good referee. We know she's refereed big games. And towards the end of the game, Paqueta tries a rainbow flick okay, above the try defender.
As you do.
As you do, like Neymar did before. And it doesn't really come off, but anyway, the game is played. And then you see Frappard coming towards Paqueta and saying something to him, which we believe in France is like, don't do that. You're 3-1 up. There's like a minute to go. Don't try to get people angry or mad at you, because then the situation could degenerate.
Degenerate, yes.
To what Paqueta replies to her clearly rudely, and he gets a yellow card for it. So my issue is, I've got a few issues. Why are you not allowed to do rainbow flick on a football pitch, whether you play with your friends or in Ligue 1 or in the Champions League? I don't know. Two, why is she getting involved and telling him off for trying a rainbow flick? And two, I can see his reaction of being angry. Why are you telling me how to play football, me? And he gets a yellow for it. I don't like this thing.
So, okay, I'm in two minds about this, and obviously there have been instances in the past.
Yeah, so Neymar got yellow carded.
Neymar's had it. Yeah. One of the most famous cases was many years ago in Brazil. There was a guy named Curlon, aka who used to basically go and like he'd balance it on his head.
Yeah, juggles on his head. Yeah.
The thing is, people tend to do this stuff when they're 3-0 up, right?
Yeah.
When there's no, you want to do a rainbow flick when there's skin on the game. When it's 0-0, when you do it to help your team win, I have no problem with it. I can understand if you start doing this stuff when you're 3-0 up, 4-0 up, it does feel like you're showing
up
your opponent.
Yeah, it winds up the opposition. I get that.
And the referee's job is to make sure, keep the players safe, to make sure that people aren't humiliated for no reason by pointless flick. You know, Paqueta.
Okay, but in that case, ban the nutmegs, because nutmegs are exactly the same. Nutmegs is humiliating like a rainbow flick is in that case.
Right, I think the difference is, do you go and do you nutmeg players when you're, well, not because it's slightly different than a rainbow flick, but
yeah, but
the question is, if you start doing this stuff when you're 4 or 5 0 up with the intent to mock, if that is the feeling you get, and I think that's something you have to judge.
But I'm not sure rainbow flick is mocking, is it? It's a way of dribbling someone like any other dribble.
I don't know. Again, it depends on the situation of the game. I would always use that test, right? I think there is something, call me old-fashioned, but I think there is something of a code of not showing up your opponents. This is also
why, if the opposition
have three players sent off and the 5'2" right back goes in goal, I don't think you should run up the score. Other people say, oh, no, you have to respect the game by playing hard until the very end, no matter.
Whatever.
It's a different cultural thing.
I hear you.
But I always ask that question. You know, would you do this? And look, to be fair to Neymar, Neymar's done rainbow flicks at 0-0 in the 10th minute. So there's my answer. I can say, all right, go ahead, Neymar. Paqueta, bit of a packet.
Yeah, maybe.
Romeo Beckham made his debut for Fort Lauderdale, playing alongside another famous son, Harvey Neville. Jules, we love those father and son pairs.
We love it. And we talked, you know, there's another question coming up about Cristiano and his son as well. And I love that. I see them and Romeo Beckham is tall and skinny, and Harvey Neville as well, playing them together in the US.
Does Harvey Neville look like his dad or like his uncle?
I thought more like his dad, but I asked myself the same question as you. I looked at him and the footage, and I was like, okay, who, you know, who is he taking more from?
Can we agree he's better off if he looks like mom?
I'm sure the Neville brothers won't mind us saying that.
No, I'm sure they won't.
I mean, Romeo
can take his pick.
Exactly. Yeah, Romeo can be mum or dad.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, I think let them play. Let them enjoy their football. Not too much pressure. In a way, it's maybe good that they don't sign MLS straight away. I don't know if they're good enough or not. In Venice, I don't know what their level is really yet.
It's the third flight, I think, in the US.
I think is good at their age to start at that level and see how they develop. The Premier League will continue the trial into safe standing. Gab, are standing areas a good thing? Obviously, coming back from way, way back in the years.
So, standing areas, terracing, for those who don't know, were banned in the Premier League. They still exist in the Football League.
Yeah.
Going back to Hillsborough, 1989, right? After that, they made everybody change. It took a while and stuff. They're part and parcel in other countries. There is a way to do it in a safe way. I don't think, clearly, terracing and standing made what happened at Hillsborough worse, but that's not the reason that horrible tragedy happened. There's policing, many other factors, mostly policing, actually, contributed to that. So I think it's great, because we also have situation, and if you've been to games in the Premier League, you have situations where fans will just stand anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say it's more fun to stand, but a lot of times, depending on the standing you're in, you want to stand.
Yeah, and you want to sing.
And you want to sing.
Standing up.
And standing up, yeah. And if you can do it safely, you know, without infringing the sight lines of other people who may not want to stand or may not be able to stand, then by all means, they should do that. I'd say it's about time that they do this because, again, they do this in Germany, most notably, and they're safe as houses.
Yeah, completely.
Cristiano Ronaldo's mom says that her grandson is even better than Cristiano was at age 11. She would know, right?
She would. Cristiano Ronaldo Jr. or Cristianinho, if you want to call him with his like little nickname kind of thing. I look at this and say, okay, Cristiano growing up was playing in the streets, you know, in Madeira with his friends. That's what he did, right? His son.
Playing for.
Yeah, and for a club. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? And his local club.
His son plays in his back garden with Cristiano Ronaldo.
So first, his son plays with his own dad, who is one of the greatest ever.
Right.
Two, he's been playing at the Juve youth teams, not at the Manchester United youth team, with the coaching that goes with it, and at the Real Madrid youth team as well before that. And I just think that you must learn. Already, you're probably very gifted because I believe in talent through DNA anyway.
He probably has pretty good genes, yeah.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you've got the best role model that you can have, teaching you how to play and teaching you how to live your life as a sportsman, even at that kind of age. Plus all the coaching from all those great clubs and great coaches. Of course, he's going to be better than his dad at the same age.
Yeah, I don't know. I also refer you back to the children of Steffi Graf and Andre Agassi.
Okay, but
I just want to say this.
I can give you a lot of children who are very good like their dads.
I put this in here because it's Cristiano's mom, it's funny, whatever. I hope we don't mention Cristianinho again until he makes his professional debut, if he makes a professional debut, because what this guy doesn't need is any kind of further pressure than he does.
Sure.
Mention this because grandma talked about it, fine.
Yeah.
I am not going to mention him. I make a pledge not to mention him again on the show.
It's very good of you. And Gab, I didn't know who Ronnie Brunswick was until yesterday. I'm pretty sure you didn't know who he was either.
No, I had no idea who he was.
Great story.
So this guy, this seems crazy. He's the vice president of Suriname. He also owns the team called, I don't even know how to pronounce this, Inter Moengatopea, I think. And they're playing, you told me he also has 50 children and he used to be an arms dealer.
Yeah, something like that. It's a crazy life so far. He's 60.
They're playing in the CONCACAF League, which is like the Europa League for CONCACAF. And they're playing against Olimpia Tegucigalpa, which I'm guessing must be from Honduras.
Yeah.
And he decides to name himself in the starting lineup. The man is 60 years old. There's clips of this out on social.
Yeah, he really played.
I don't know what to think of this.
But you can't be allowed. He would have been registered.
Age discrimination, right?
But even the registration, maybe anyone can go on and play.
Maybe he registered himself at the start of the season without telling anybody. I don't know. I find this absolutely extraordinary.
What kind of owner would you want to see play in Europe for the team? Or not? Would you like to see Roman Abramovich play? Imagine one of the Glazers playing for United in a League Cup game. Oh, no, they're out.
Stop trolling United, man. Like, all right. This is a good point. Good situation to stop here. But we got to come back on Monday because we've got Chelsea against City to look forward to. So until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.